to be getting a report from the department on the SADC protocol on gender and development. We know that we have always been behind with the ratification of these. As we know that South Africa is one of the signatories. And do hope that in future we will able to present this on time and not remain behind. We are also aware that we still have the Convention on the Right of Child, the second and the third. It still needs to be presented to the committee, and the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, the first report, and also the African Charter on the Rights and Welfare of the Child. We just need to remind and request for this also to be made available in due course. Honorable Duncan, I saw your hand up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to know about the apologies, or do we keep it for later? We can. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you are right. Can we get apologies from the committee secretary?
Morning, members. We receive apologies from Honorable Libenya, Honorable Kekan, and Honorable Grace and Robinson. She's all assisted.
Okay, now. What is the
He's attending a course organized by the PC on women on communication in Johannesburg.
I suppose we have two Grace, because he just received an apology that you won't be here with us this morning, but we really appreciate it that you are here. I hope we don't have two Graces. Okay, these are the apologies, members. Are we accepting them? Apologies accepted. Over to the department.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and colleagues. Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity to do this presentation. Honorable Chairperson and Members, we recall that the SADC Protocol on Gender and Development was adopted by SADC Heads of State on 17 August 2008 in Gauteng. And we also know that there are 15 members of SADC, and only 13 members signed in 2008, which is all the other members except Botswana and Mauritius. Those are the two countries that did not sign, and they haven't signed up till now. So it's 15 member states, but only 13 signed. Now the challenge is around the issue of ratification, because for the protocol to be implemented, it needs two-thirds of the countries that have signed. So the two-thirds will be 9 members that would have ratified the protocol for it to be implemented. And the challenge at the moment is that this protocol has not reached the two-thirds. And South Africa is one of the culprits, because there are only 7 member states that have ratified. So SADC is running short of 2 countries to ratify, so that it will be the two-thirds of the number that is required. That is why we share the same sentiments with the portfolio committee, that we really need to speed up the process of the ratification of the protocol, and also it will assist us in many ways if it is ratified, because then it will be implemented and in the country, because at the moment we can't implement it because it is not an official and legally binding instrument, which is a very, very important instrument. I will then allow Ranjit to do the presentation. How we structured the presentation, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that we took article by article and said what are then the implications for us as a country.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. At the outset, I need to say that South Africa has, in following up with what the DG is saying, is that in South Africa has not ratified this document, and I think much of the situation actually lies with us in terms of not being able to ratify, given the changes that have taken place over the last 2 years. However, also to add that when the SADC protocol on gender and development was adopted, it was adopted in South Africa, and it was adopted on the 17th of August, 2008 in Sandton. So that was a historic moment for us. And we are going on that momentum. The presidency immediately submitted to cabinet in 2008 for adoption, for ratification, and that had gone through. So the following year, by March, we were actually ready to ratify, and then a number of occurrences happened, and it got stalled. So in a sense, we had to give our undertaking. Minister had to give her undertaking in the last ministerial meeting in Namibia at the beginning of June, that South Africa would actually be one of the countries that would make the two-thirds majority to make sure that the protocol entered into force. Very briefly, the presentation on the slides is not a repetition of what's in this book. This book is the actual protocol that we made possible. Okay, so we'll try and take it very simplistically through the whole thing. Basically, the protocol it's actually a very well thought out collection of all the commitments that we've made regionally, globally, and continentally, meaning that it took into account the Beijing, the CEDAW, the ICPD, which was the Population International Convention on Population Development. It took into account a number of instruments, and then it was able to work with all of them to see how far we had gone, what was achieved, what are the gaps, what needs to be closed, and it tried to look at that from that angle. So it also considered the MDGs. It's a document that actually addresses some gaps, but it does so in such a nice way, because it uses measurable targets. And all of these targets, as members would know by now, all of them are to be achieved by 2015. It ensures that there's a sense of accountability by all SADC member states, meaning that once you ratify, you make this document legally binding, and you're forced to report against it. So it's making sure that all member states who ratify are actually held accountable. And it's providing a forum for exchange of best practices and so on. The significance of the protocol, honorable members would recall that in 1997, South Africa was signatory to the Heads of State and Government's Declaration on Gender and Development. And then in 1999, its addendum on prevention and elimination of all forms of violence. What happened was similar to the situation we are experiencing, is that if you don't have anything to hold member states accountable, you could not get them to move on gender equality and women's empowerment. So it was actually in the SADC, heads of state themselves took the decision to elevate the heads of state declaration into a legally binding document, which is the protocol. So you'll find that this protocol actually has 28 substantive targets, and all of them to be achieved by 2015. What's a huge bonus for the sub-region is that it's a global first. There's no other region, sub-region, that was able to come up with its own protocol. So that has put SADC at a different level internationally. As a legal instrument, you find that it actually enforces mainstreaming of gender into all of SADC's protocols on trade, protocols on education. It's forcing it because it actually puts it in the center of it. So that's one of the huge advantages of this protocol, so that it allows for development, not only in terms of gender, but within the mainstream activities. So that was it was a huge accomplishment. And also what is very significant of this protocol is that it allows for a comprehensive M&E by institutionalizing mechanisms in place. And the mechanism that we're referring to is actually the SADC ministers for gender and women's affairs. It's institutionalized. And that's been a huge achievement. In terms of history, it was actually in 2005 when the SADC heads of state at their summit, they mandated the SADC secretariat to change the declaration into a protocol. So it's not a nice to do; it's something we had to do. And then, of course, it took many months of struggle. A roadmap was developed, but there was a huge support base from the private sector, from the civil society sector. And South Africa played a very big role in that sense, in helping to drive the development of this protocol. Of course, it got thrown out a number of times in the follow-up summits of heads of state, but eventually it was signed in South Africa. The protocol at a glance, if I could bring members' attention to the presentation. What we've done here is we've not rewrite the protocol, but it's to give a synopsis of what each article contains and where possible the specific targets. Articles 1 to 3 actually is about principles and objectives. It covers like definitions, what are the objectives, what are the general principles. And the protocol in the main, it brings together existing commitments within most of the international instruments. It looks at time frames. It creates specific mechanisms for implementation and sharing of best practices and deepening integration in the region. Articles 4 to 8 actually focus on the constitutional and legal rights. And these articles ensure that constitutions in the region actually enshrine gender equality, and it must give such provisions primacy over customary law, especially in countries where customary law was still enforced. All laws that are discriminatory to women should be repealed. It provides for equality in terms of accessing justice, marriage, family rights, the rights of widows, elderly women, women with disabilities, the girl child, the boy child, and other socially excluded groups. So it's a very inclusive protocol. It's got a number of specific targets in this regard that must be achieved. so that you can ensure that you abolish the minority status of women. Article 9 particularly focuses on people with disabilities. It provides that that people with disabilities must have their health, welfare, and other rights promoted. It must be protected, and this must even be done through enacting or reviewing legislation. So the specific target here is that you have to take into account the vulnerabilities and abuses that women with disabilities are facing, and that includes in the workplace. So it's allowing for legislation to be put in place. Article 10 focuses on widows and widowers' rights, where it is suggesting that laws must be strengthened or put in place to make sure that widows and widowers are not badly treated, and unless a court decides, widows automatically should have guardianship and custody of children. They have the right to continue to live in their marriage homes, and they should have an equitable share in inheriting from their late husband. So a widow also shall have the right to marry a person of her choice and receive protection from all forms of violence. These rights also apply to widowers. So it was in a big way, it was helping many of the member states that didn't have legislation to protect women. Article 11 focuses particularly on the girl child and the boy child. And in this regard, policies, programs, and laws must be in place to ensure the protection and development of both the boy and the girl child, because boy children also have abuses that they face. And this was including eliminating all forms of discrimination in the family, community, institutions, and government, very much in line with what CEDAW says. CEDAW talks about family laws, and we might want to in the future assess ourselves against that. It also then highlights harmful cultural attitudes and practices, and that they should be eliminated, including violence and economic exploitation, and that there must be equal access to education and health. The protocol doesn't mention by name whether it's genital mutilation or whether it's ukutwala, or other practices. It's for countries, different countries, to interpret it. So we will then be able to interpret this in line with what we want in the country. Yes. Articles 12 to 13 is more on governance. And this is the part that we've always been quoting over the last few years. It's on representation and participation. And the target members will know is 50% representation of women in all decision-making positions in public and private sectors, and it must be attained by 2015. Perhaps we might not reach the target by 2015, but for South Africa, it has a huge implication in terms of the gender equality bill. It helps us to push the issue of the bill. So that's the article that we must put up front for ourselves. Article 14 is on education and training. It provides for quality education for women and men, as well as retention at all levels of education. It provides for challenging stereotypes in curriculum, in textbooks, in the education system in general, and it looks at addressing violence in educational institutions. So in that regard, it says that laws should be enacted, and that policies and programs of the educational system should be gender sensitive. Articles 15 to 19 is actually focusing on the economic development of women. It looks at productive resources and employment and the economic empowerment. It provides for the equal participation. So once again, it's about not just women women becoming or increasing their wealth, but that they also take part in decision-making in the economy. So it's in terms of policy formulation and implementation. The article also has provisions on entrepreneurship. It has targets. It has targets on access to credit and public procurement contracts, as well as stipulations on trade policies, equal access to property, resources, and employment. In this regard, this is very useful for us, given that we are now looking at the new growth path. There's a number of specific targets that must be achieved that I've outlined there. But we go on to Articles 20 to 25, which looks at gender-based violence. This article makes provision for the implementation of a variety of strategies including enacting, reviewing, reforming, enforcement of legislation which is aimed at eliminating all forms of gender-based violence. Gender-based violence therefore includes, in our case, looking at lesbian and gay issues. And it also includes trafficking in all its forms, whether it's on women or it's for prostitution, or whether it's for labor, or women being used as mules for drugs. There are specific stipulations in the provision, in these provisions, for a package of treatment and care services for gender-based violence, and that includes the access to post-exposure prophylaxis and the establishment of special courts to address these cases. There are specific provisions for human trafficking. A section which provides for the M&E sets targets and indicators to ensure that gender-based violence is reduced by half by 2015. So South Africa has quite a huge thing to meet within 3 years. Yeah. You know, if you look at the specific targets to be achieved, interestingly enough, the protocol says we must adopt integrated approaches, including institutional cross-sector structures, with the aim of reducing current levels of gender-based violence by half by 2015. And totally in line with this, Minister has proposed the National Council for Gender-Based Violence. So South Africa is on track in many senses, but whether we will meet the target is what we need to assess. Article 26 focuses on health. It provides for adoption and implementation of policies and programs that looks at the physical, the mental, the emotional, and the social well-being of women. It's got specific targets for reducing maternal mortality ratio and ensuring access to quality sexual and reproductive health services. Members will recall that in the sub-region, the sub-Saharan region has one of the highest rates. In fact, it has the highest rate of maternal mortality in the world. So this particular article is actually very applicable in the sub-region. Let me just go back to health and also show you that one of the specific targets that the protocol raises is ensuring the provision of hygiene and sanitary facilities and nutritional needs of women, including women in prison. Interestingly enough, we also have our own sanitary dignity campaign that we are embarking on. So those things tie in with the protocol's provisions. Article 27 is specifically on HIV and AIDS. It covers prevention, treatment, care, and support in relation to HIV and AIDS. And you know, in the sub-Saharan region, one of the leading causes of increased maternal mortality is a high HIV and AIDS incident rate. So these two articles go hand in hand. You reduce HIV and AIDS, you'll have an impact on reducing maternal mortality. Article 28 focuses on peace building and conflict resolution. It provides for, once again, numbers, equal representation of women in conflict resolution and peace building processes, as well as in integration of a gender perspective in resolution of conflict in the region. In this particular article, it will affect different member states differently. South Africa has a different role to play in peace building, as opposed to the DRC, where women are victims of war and conflict. So when we're looking at this issue, we must look at it holistically for the whole sub-region. Articles 29 to 31 focuses on media, information, and communication. And it provides for gender to be mainstreamed in all information, communication, and media policies and laws. It calls once again for numbers, equal representation in all areas and at all levels of media work, and for women and men to be given equal voice through the media. So this is a huge challenge for South Africa. The protocol calls for increasing programs for, by, and about women, and also using the media to challenge gender stereotypes that exist. Rather than perpetuating, it should help us in addressing some of the issues. Articles 32 to 36, this is the last article. It's on the implementation, the monitoring, and the evaluation. These articles actually make provision for gender-sensitive budgets and resource allocation. It looks at the oversight of the protocol by gender ministers in the sub-region. It looks at each country having to develop its own national action plan based on the protocol. And then it looks at an M&E process through the collection of baseline data so that it can evaluate biannually. It's, the protocol requires that all member states submit comprehensive reports to the Secretariat every 2 years, which will indicate progress achieved in the implementation of provisions. In this regard, Honourable Members, South Africa, the report is due now on the 25th of June, and we are actually on track in answering this. So what has happened now is that it's simply filling in a tool that the SADC provide. They provide a monitoring tool where they're still assessing what you've done, although we haven't ratified. The next report is due in 2013, but when you ratify, then the country is compelled to the target. In terms of constitutional and legal rights, and I've used some clauses just to help members to be able to assess in South Africa. In terms of constitutional and legal rights, do we have provisions in our constitution for non-discrimination generally? It's yes, chapter 1 of our constitution. So we are okay in that sense. Do we have a provision for non-discrimination based on sex specifically? Yes. Chapter 2 of our Constitution. Do we have a provision for non-discrimination on the basis of sex and others, example like marital status, pregnancy, disability? Yes, our Section 9 in the Constitution. Do we have a provision for promotion of gender equality? Yes, in Section 9. Do we have provisions, other provisions that relate to gender? Yes, in Section 12. And this is only now the Constitution. We've got a legal framework that also pushes some of these issues. Do we have a clawback clause? No. Do we address contradictions between constitution, law, and practices? We do. Sections 15 and 30. Do we have a provision for affirmative action? Yes. Section 187. So in terms of adopting and ratifying the protocol, it has very little implication to amend our constitution. We don't have to amend our constitution. If we are asking for ratification, we're not saying to government, you need to amend the constitution. So in that sense, it will help us. So that's why I highlighted this. In terms of adoption and ratification, as the DG had highlighted earlier, 13 of 15 member states have adopted the protocol in 2008. Botswana and Mauritius have not signed, and it does not look like they will be signing anytime soon. 7 countries have to date ratified, and they have deposited their instruments of ratification with the SADC Secretariat. The Democratic Republic of Congo, it has ratified in its national parliament, but has yet to deposit its instrument with SADC. So that results in only 7 countries out of 9. In order to for the protocol to enter into force in the whole sub-region, 2 more member states need to deposit their instruments. So we're hoping to be one of those countries that will then claim that glory that it is us that managed to get it entered into force. Article 41 of the protocol requires that the two-third majority should ratify and deposit. So, South Africa's ratification is quite critical. My last slide, Honourable Members, is what's next? In other words, how do we domesticate this protocol in the country? First of all, in terms of reporting on progress, we have the SADC monitoring tool that was developed by the SADC Secretariat. It's got indicators against which we report. It's very comprehensive, and we've done that, and we are about to submit, and we will share that with the committee. Our next step is ratification of the protocol by the National Parliament. We then thereafter deposit the instrument of ratification with the SADC Secretariat. And then we of course, through the year, we've been having national consultations, which touches on many issues in the protocol. But we will continue to have national consultations to ensure domestication. But domestication at the country level as well can be achieved through our gender equality bill, through our strategies that we are currently tabling on mainstreaming, and through our M&E system that we develop in the department. programs that are facilitated by the department in joint collaboration with other departments and across sectors. It's to ensure that certain targets which need to be met at the implementation level must be done so within given time frames. Also, that government departments need to take on board the articles that are relevant to them and ensure during their planning and budgeting processes that it's incorporated within their normal program. So it doesn't need to have a separate costing situation. It becomes part of our strategic planning process in the departments. And of course, there's an ongoing M&E process, and we should be having review consultative meetings on an annual basis. And the preparation of the next country progress report, the report is due in 2013. The process should start in 2012. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranji. I'm not sure whether the DG wants to add. Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation, and also that we, as South Africa, we are not too late in submitting in this report, and as I've already also indicated earlier, that we hope that even with others, we will try and, you know, speed up the process so that we submit in due course. Honorable Member, here is a report which has been presented to us. I am not sure as to whether we have any clarity-seeking questions or comments, because I'm sure we are all aware that we can't change this protocol. If need be, I hope I'll be corrected. If need be, it will have to be changed at the summit. But we are, free to make comments and clarifications. Member Duncan, followed by Member Disetero.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Well done. I just want to ask with regard to the letter that the Minister has sent to the Speaker, whether there's any response as yet. In the last paragraph under recommendations within the letter, it says that it talks to, can I just read it, Chairperson? It is the letter, the copy of the letter that we received that the Minister sent to the Speaker. It refers here that the protocol has been submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor in Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for scrutiny to ascertain that it is not possible conflict with domestic laws of the Republic of South Africa. Now, I would like to know whether an investigation has been done, who's done it, and what was the outcome of that? Because I think it would be quite interesting. I heard that Ms. Reddy did speak, especially on the last slide, that we are quite in line with, the protocol is quite in line with the Constitution, which is very much in favor of South Africa. But I would just like to know whether there's any other laws, although, our Constitution is the highest, so any other law is I would want to believe, I don't know what the word is to really describe it is, so that is my first question. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a comment. I would like to thank the presenter.
about the SADC protocol. It's quite clear, and we understand it. And I would like to ask a question that the two countries that you made mention of, Botswana and Mauritius, and you said there's no sign that they will sign. What happens then? Thank you.
Maybe before you respond, you could as well respond to this one. I'm not sure whether I understood. I think it's in relation to what the Honorable Member Ditsitolo is asking, to say that now that South Africa has signed, is that the two-thirds majority? Can we get a response from that?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. The first question was around the correspondence between the Speaker and our Minister. We have made a follow-up, Honorable Members, and the information that our minister received from the Speaker's office was that this is the reason why the protocol was referred to the portfolio committee as part of a consultation towards the ratification of the protocol. Yes. In other words, the Speaker's office is also very committed in speeding up the process, and that is why one of the reasons why we have to make this presentation here. But regarding the legislation, domestic legislation, whilst we are still waiting for the state law advisors to tell us. But in the department internally, Advocate Karine Pinar, who is the head of our legal services, has already started with the project of the what we are calling harmonization of laws. We decided to start with laws that are impacting on women and also on gender equality, because we are moving towards the gender equality bill. So she is looking at all the laws in the country, be it equality laws, be it laws that are speaking to violence against women and children and so on, so that when we assume with the drafting of the gender equality bill, we are well aware of whether there are any contradictions or what. For instance, in the Domestic Violence Act, you'll find that there is a mention of issues of structures that should deal with issues of violence. And we are looking at that in line with the proposed National Council on gender-based violence, for instance. So whilst we are waiting for the state law advisors, but we are doing something as the department. We have started doing that. Maybe we do need to clarify the fact that the two-thirds majority has not yet been achieved, because South Africa, yes, signed in 2008 when the heads of state signed, but it has not ratified. And this is the process that we are trying to speed up. Yes. And the other point, I guess the signing by Botswana and Mauritius, it's they haven't signed. Not that they will not sign. They haven't signed up till now. We are not sure what may be the challenges, whether they they have different opinions around the issue of the protocol as countries. We are not sure of that. SADC is worried about South Africa not having ratified because they don't see the problem, because South Africa is doing well in as far as putting legislation into place, into structural responses towards violence against women and children and so on and so on, all the articles that are there in the protocol. However, they are just concerned that South Africa is not ratifying, but we are correcting that. I think those were the responses. One other thing, Chairperson and honourable members, is that we've realised as the department that we have a lot of information that we can use. And the instruments that we are signatory to, like the CEDAW, like this protocol, we can use this very, very effectively as our monitoring and evaluation tools. And we are trying now to combine all these instruments to ensure that we finalize our monitoring and evaluation framework. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Chair. I just wanted to add also to what DJ was saying. In terms of us signing, it was a whole process before we could actually have the document signed. So that's what we meant by the state law advisor. Every time the document was going in for consideration at the summit, we had to send it to the state law advisor to ensure that the language that's in the protocol is the language that's in our constitution or the language that we are happy with. So in that sense, it has always been going to the state law. So before the president signed what is called the president's minute, which we then tabled to SADC to say South Africa will sign this document, it means we had to have an official document from the state law advisor saying that no clause in the protocol and no language being used in the protocol is contradicting South African law. So on that basis, the president then signed the minute. So as DG says, subsequent investigations now are more substantive issues. And also, I just want to add about Botswana and Mauritius, Honourable Chair, just to say that ministers in the SADC meeting in Namibia raised their concern with Botswana and Mauritius, and Botswana has a clear problem with the language in the protocol that contradicts its constitution, which would mean that some clauses in its constitution would have to be amended. They've got a tremendous problem with that. Mauritius is not signing on the basis of the clause on affirmative action, because they believe that their constitution is very clear on that. So ministers were trying to convince the ministers from those two countries, and they are looking into the issue, but clearly they have a challenge and they would need a lot of support from other ministers for gender and women's issues. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Nxumalo, followed by Honourable Member Dichitelo, and then Member Peterson.
Hey, thank you, Chairperson. I'm happy about the explanation about the challenges that is facing Mauritius and Botswana, because I was going to ask what is the challenge that is facing these two countries. And I'm worried because you're just mentioning Botswana and Mauritius. What about the Malawi? Because Malawi, they didn't sign in this document. Did they sign, or maybe it's a mistake? And what is their challenge? Because if you can know their challenge, and I'm happy to hear that the ministers, they're trying to communicate with these other countries to make sure that they're in here about their challenge. Maybe you can assist South Africa, but can you just tell us about the challenges that is facing Malawi? Maybe the constitution again. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Let me note all heads so that when the response is done, after Member Maduna, it will be Member Bly and then Member Seki.
Thank you, Chair. My first question has been forwarded because I was also going to ask about Malawi. I just want to find out as to whether, let's say, the problems that Botswana is facing, as mentioned now, is there any possibilities of, maybe I'm asking the department, I ought to ask, can't something be done, like for instance getting other countries to replace those that have problems so that we can go ahead? I just want to find out the difficulties. Why wait for this to... Is there any special reason for us to... Because I don't see... I mean, the presenter didn't even talk of time frame. So are we going to wait for Botswana, and even if it goes to as far as constitution in their country? So it means it's going to take time. So I'm just asking whether is there anything else that can be done to.
Malawi.
Thank you, Shepherdson. I think mine is a follow-up based on the question that was raised by Honorable Duncan, and I think they've touched it, but it's just a follow-up on that. That is it possible that we, maybe as Parliament, adopt the report while the department is still waiting for the legal advice? Is it not going to be, if there can be conflicts within our domestic laws, what's going to happen? Is it not early for the department to present the report to us before getting that advice from the legal section? Thanks, Shepherdson. Just wanted to clarity based on that.
To you?
Thank you very much, Shepherdson. We would like to clarify that the protocol, the copies that are in front of the members are copies that were signed in 2008, but Malawi has subsequently signed. Yeah, because the countries will be joining. The second issue about Botswana and Mauritius, I really don't think it is at our level as officials. But also, it will not affect us once the South Africa, the two countries have ratified. Whichever two countries out of the ones that have signed, whenever they ratify,
then there shouldn't be a problem because we would have met the two-thirds. I think what we need to be worried about as South Africa is for us to ensure that we ratify as South Africa so that it is then implemented. The issue of legislation, honourable members, it is not going to be problematic because, as we have explained, we've been consulting with the state law advisors as the protocol was moving towards it to be signed, and after it was signed, we also consulted with the state law advisors to check the finer details whether there are no issues that might be clashing with our domestic legislation. But we haven't received any areas where there might be contradiction. But also, as indicated, our legal advisor will be finalizing this because she is going through it, and we will submit it to Parliament. Maybe by next week we would have finalized, because it's a project that we already dealing with. Yeah, we will also speed up that, but we really don't foresee any substantive issues that may contradict the protocol. Thank you, Chair.
Member Duncan. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to make sure. Maybe I don't want our DG to repeat, but ratifying this protocol is very important, and I think that we would most probably all support that. But is there any process, further process, to ratify the protocol? Like, for instance, any other participation by certain stakeholders, for instance, that still need to be part of the decision making as to whether we must ratify it? Because if I understand correctly, once we ratify it, it means that we bring it to the stage of implementation. And if not, then I just want to know that, is it just a matter of the department and all of us deciding we're going to ratify it and send in a report to Parliament, and what is the process after today?
Before you respond, Gigi, I think I am not yet clear as to, because you are still waiting for a response. Yes, you said you are still waiting for a response. What impact will the response have, or whether there won't be any impact? Whatever response you are waiting for won't impact on adopting this, because I also heard you say, the DG saying that it will be finalized sometime next week, which actually really does not it makes me to be hesitant in terms of us adopting this, whether we should wait for that finalization. And I think my question, it's the same question that was asked by Member Teke Hore. Since you said that you are still waiting for this, and also based on the response that you are still going to finalize this, meaning that we, as going to be in the state of adopting today. I mean, today. Can you respond to that, please?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start afresh. I'll try and be as simple as possible so that I don't confuse the honorable members. Before the president signed this protocol, this protocol was sent to the law advisors, state law advisors, and checked each and every clause whether we are okay with it as South Africa. And then he signed. But after he had signed, we have then since, because there are lots of legislation that came into place after that, our domestic legislation. Why then we had to give the state law advisors was to ensure that this protocol is still in line with our legislation as a country, so that if there are any contradictions on substantive issues, we can then notify the Secretariat of SADC to say, as a country, that these are the issues. The process, the reason why, Honorable Chairperson, we said we will submit, we can even speed it up and finalize it even this week, because it was a matter of checking the legislation that came after the protocol was signed. So we can finalize that this week and then submit to the Honorable Chairperson. And we will get the response from the state law advisors, including the letters that they have written before this was signed by our president. The second question that was asked was around what is the process now. From our side as the department, we have done consultations with the gender missionary, with the other stakeholders. We have done it. So now it's in the hands of Parliament. If Parliament, for instance, feels that they need to do public hearings, I'm making an example. If Parliament would feel that they still need further consultation, but on our side we have done the consultation. So it is now in the hands of Parliament to do the ratification process.
Thank you for that clarification. I think we will still have to discuss it in our portfolio committee with members. Member Plage.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I hear, Chair. Apologies for coming late, first and foremost. I went to 120 Lane Street only to find the select committee there. I was saying, with us, Parliament, since the DG says it might take a period of a week or so to finalize, can't we conclude it by saying, let us wait for that week until the whole thing is finalized and you have the state law advisors' advice.
And then from there, you bring it to us and we'll adopt it. But why I'm saying this, because this whole thing of signing of protocols, it's a wholly legal matter. So for me, I don't see why don't we take the whole, wait for the whole package, the legal package to be completed before we can do a quarter of it whilst waiting for another quarter or a half, because this is a legal package that has to come here. Now, for us as Parliament, as the body that actually makes laws for the country, I feel we wouldn't be doing justice to this protocol to sign it before we actually have the whole package wrapped up and complete. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think it does appear that the feeling of members is that we wait for next week, because I think yes, there won't be plenary next week, but committees will be sitting. So it will just for us to adopt this protocol. And in terms of the process, we will discuss it as the portfolio committee. Honourable Duncan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to, the DG said that they done consultation with stakeholders and all of that, whether they can perhaps, while we are waiting for next week to adopt and give our comment on the ratification of this protocol, whether the department can make available to us as soon as possible the process that was followed for the stakeholders, and just a wrap-up report, so that we also have that as evidence to say that the department has now not just all of a sudden realized that it is about time for this Parliament to ratify this protocol, that there was indeed a process. And like my colleague has said, there's now the legal advisors process that we're waiting for. So please just wrap up. We quite understand what is going on. We are in support of the process of ratification of this protocol, but we need the information in front of us so that we can make these decisions on a clear mind with enough information from the department. Thank you.
Do you want to respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. We would like to commit that we will submit on Friday, this Friday, the report of all the consultations that has happened, all the documentation from the state law advisors, and also a report from us, our legal advisor, what she may have found. But we will submit all the information on Friday.
Thank you very much. Let me thank DG and the department, and let me also thank the honourable members for having made it to this meeting. And I think we have had a very fruitful discussions, and also, as they say, you know, you learn every day that. Some of us have learned something that, you know, we were not actually aware of. And suffice to say that I think even without having, you know, gone, legally, I mean, some of us, when you go through the protocol, you realize that South Africa as a country has really done a lot. it has really done a lot, and we also appreciate the fact that, you know, in terms of even domestically, you know, our constitution has not been affected, and we will not have to amend the constitution, which was going to be another process that was going to prolong the whole thing. I must say that this, you know, has been, you know, awaited for. 2 weeks ago or 1 week ago, in the multi-party caucus, this standard protocol on gender was raised, because there were some members who attended a SADC meeting where it was raised that, you know, South Africa has not signed. And we really thank you for even being able then to catch up with, you know, the backlog. With these few weeks, we thank you once more, and you are released.